Chapter 10, today we're going to be talking about the good shepherd. That adjective, good, the Greek word is a fat word. I'll give you the definition of it today. It's one of my favorite Greek words, probably my favorite Greek adjective. But it, in essence, one of the best synonyms is the ideal shepherd, which is one of the ways that Jesus describes himself. We will probably be 3 weeks in this chapter. There's some wonderful things in here. There's some tremendous verses of assurance in this chapter. And just in the way of recap, I stopped at verse 38 last time, even though according to the verses and chapters that are in our English Bibles, chapter 10 doesn't start till after verse 41. I believe that the Word of God is infallible, straight from God, and perfect in its original text. I don't believe all the translations are infallible, and certainly the chapter numbers and verse numbers are not infallible because they weren't even part of the original letter. They were added later just to make it easier to refer to things. And so I try to stop when we break somewhere. I try to stop with a certain train of thought, so we're looking at things in their context. And one of the things that you notice with a close look is that the last thing we saw was Jesus talking to this one guy who had been born blind. Jesus said that astonishing thing to his disciples, that the fact that this man had been born blind was directly because of the workings, so the workings of God in his life might be displayed. We spent quite a bit of time last week talking about the fact, it was 2 weeks ago. We spent 2 weeks on that chapter, but we spent time talking about the fact that the healing of that man is not the only working that God did. Joe asked me a really good question. I love good questions, and something that looked like something you've been thinking about. He said, would it still be true that this man was born blind so that the workings of God might be displayed in his life? Would that still be true if Jesus had not healed him? Really good question. And the answer is absolutely. God isn't only at work in my lives when he takes away my infirmities, which he's able to do at any time. He was able to stop that guy from being born blind to begin with. But it's important to see in that passage, and I'm going to reiterate it just because we need to be reminded, that God's working and God's plan in our life is the whole thing. We're so short-sighted. I was telling myself that this whole last week. Just because this part of the chapter I'm in is stinky doesn't mean that it's a stinky story. It just means this is a hard part. This is even more valuable that I draw close to him when it's hard. And so this man's life, God did step in. He did heal him. The one thing we don't know is we don't get to see the whole story of this guy's life, so we don't know what happened after the healing. Maybe the 20-some-odd years of being blind and then being healed were preparation for the rest of his life as being a formerly blind person and all that that would mean. Because the one thing we do know from Romans 8:28 is that God's working all things together for the good of those that love him and are called according to his purpose. That's from the beginning to the end. Important to see, folks, because everybody I know is under tremendous pressure right now. And it is so easy to make decisions and choices based on the feeling of fear, like Rick said, or pressure, or just despair, because I can't see how it's ever going to be different, and it could all change tomorrow. So it's important to have the God view of things. So that was the value. That's why we took 2 weeks to look at that chapter. The last thing we saw was that this guy got kicked out of the synagogue, which that excommunication meant for any Jew You are not allowed to worship God and be part of the community of God's people ever again in this nation. It was a big deal. I personally think he was probably better off getting kicked out of the synagogue if that was the kind of leaders that it had. And we saw Jesus searching him out and finding him, as Jesus often does. When church people heard us, Jesus comes and finds us and said, you know what, I'm not like that. And he got the privilege of seeing with his own eyes who Messiah was. I would love to hear the rest of that story. There's a break at between verse 38 and verse 39, but you don't see it till you get to verse 40. Verse 40 says, some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this. And that refers back up to what he starts to say in verse 38. So apparently there's some time between the time he talked alone with this man and the things that we're going to begin to look at today. I'm going to start reading. I'm going to actually read probably as far as we'll get today, maybe a little bit farther. Man, I wish everybody was here. The most common question I am asked by people in this church, as well as people all the years I've walked with Jesus, is how do you recognize God's voice? I've had people say, God has never spoken to me. And I have, right up until this week, several people I talked to said, well, I would love to have the comfort that you seem to have when things are stinky. But God's never spoken to me. I think today we get to talk about why that is and how you learn to know God's voice. It is a process, by the way. It's not like the day you become a Christian, you flip a switch, and all of a sudden you immediately recognize God's voice all the time. So we get to talk about that today. I may not get any farther than that just because that's so important. So, Lord, please bless it. Bless the recording, because half our people aren't going to be here to hear it. And it is so important. So beginning at verse 39, he starts a new train of thought. Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world. Judgment's the important word in there, and it may not mean what you think. For judgment I've come into this world so that the blind will see. Remember, he had just healed a blind guy. And those who see will become blind. That's a very enigmatic statement. However, the Pharisees seemed to know what he was saying. Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, what? Are we blind too? Interesting. Jesus said, if you were blind, that is, if you were unable to see, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim that you can see, your guilt remains. And we'll talk about that today, that what that means. And the saying comes to my mind, there are none so blind as those who will not see, who have made a choice, they've made up their minds, so they're not really looking to see. So he uses a lot of different imagery and metaphors through this chapter. It's important to look at one thing, who he's talking to. He's talking to the religious leaders of Israel. I think that we miss the real thrust of this if we don't understand who he's addressing. Because there are things that he's going to say that may not apply to us in the same way it applied to them. They're still worth knowing. I tell you the truth, chapter 10, verse 1. The man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is a shepherd of his sheep. If you have the word "the," it's a little bit misleading. The word "a" is better, because it's talking about a character issue, not a person issue. So you come in by some way other than the gate. Only thieves do that. You come in through the gate, it's because you're a true shepherd of the sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him. That's the true shepherd, and the sheep listen to his voice, not the watchman's voice, the shepherd's voice. And I'll talk to you about what all this. This is beautiful imagery, made perfect sense to them. Not so much to our American ears. I have a great illustration to show you this, of this today. He, the shepherd, calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Underline the word leads. When he has brought out his own, all his own, he goes on ahead of them. Underline that phrase. And his sheep follow him because they know his voice. Circle that word. If you've got room in your margins, the word recognize is a really good synonym for that Greek word, because they recognize his voice. But they will never follow the stranger. In fact, they'll run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Same word in Greek. Jesus used this figure of speech or parable, but they did not understand what he was telling them. I discovered something in my study yesterday I've never seen. I just looked up a word I'd never looked up and discovered it wasn't the one I thought it was. And it adds, I think, some great insight into this passage. It's the word understand. He used a figure of speech. They would have completely understood the figure of speech, the parable. So verses 1 through 7 are the parable, and then verse 7 through 16 is the explanation. But they didn't get it. It was meant to clarify something. They didn't get it. And right in here in verse 6 is the reason why they didn't get it. Therefore, because that was true, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All whoever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep didn't listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He'll come in and go out and find pasture. Verse 10 is the, in a nutshell, Satan's agenda versus Jesus' agenda. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I've come so that they may have life and have it to the full. The old King James says, more abundantly. It is a fat statement. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. That phrase, lays down his life, might be a good one to understand because he uses it 5 times in this passage. Obviously, it's a key point. Also, the word good, that adjective good, is used 3 times in this passage, and it's important to understand what that word means. I like the word ideal, although when I looked this word, this Greek word up in the dictionary, there was an entire page of definition, so it's a fat word. It's more than just nice. It's a really strong word. I'm the good shepherd. A good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep, so when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. And then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's only a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good, ideal shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. So there is the word know again, but it's a different Greek word, so it might be good to underline that. I know my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. In other words, my sheep know me the same way my Father knows me. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also, and they too will listen to my voice. And there will be one flock and one shepherd. I'm going to stop there. I'm sure we will not get that far. And we'll pick up the rest next week. I primarily want to address what he has to say about blindness, spiritual blindness, in the first part of this section, which starts in chapter 9. And then I want to talk about this whole thing that he had to say about his sheep recognizing his voice. My prayer has been, ever since I knew where we were going to be, was this would transform somebody's life. Like I said, most common questions I'm asked by believers in our church have to do with this one thing. I talked to a guy this last week who really needs to know that Jesus is close to him. And when I talked with him, he seemed to, he felt like, well, I don't know, you seem to listen to Jesus and, you know, he tells you secrets and you have conversations with him, and I'm just not sure if I've ever heard him. And I thought, you know what, I am no special, more special to Jesus than you are. It may be, just be that you don't understand how to listen for his voice, how to recognize it. I spent 2 hours talking with him. I think he had a lot better idea by the time I was finished. That's what I'm hoping will happen today. I'm meeting with a guy tomorrow, another pastor who's so discouraged. He's had some of the same stuff happen to him that happened to me, and the thing that kept me from jumping off a bridge was what I was able to hear from the Lord. The thing that keeps him from jumping off the bridge is his wife and kids, because he told me, I've never heard from the Lord. So something's wrong, because God speaks to all of his children. So perhaps the thing that's confusing or unclear can be cleared up today. If that's true, then I would die a happy man if I died after the Patriots game today and they win. So he says something that to me sounds so enigmatic. It sounds so bizarre, if you will. But note the in verse 38, but notice that the Pharisees knew he was talking about them. You ever wonder why, with your relatives that don't know Jesus, you might say the most, you know, bland, plain thing, and they react like you just stabbed them? Sometimes that's what happens when people are being convicted. Just the fact that you have Jesus in you is convicting. And you retrace your steps and you think, what did I say? And the answer is, it might not have been anything that you said. It might have just been the presence of Jesus in your life. These guys who were so clueless so much of the time about spiritual things seem to recognize that when he used this imagery about blind people receiving their sight and people who supposedly could see being shown to be blind, they knew Jesus was talking about them. They were convicted. The word judgment was the word I had you look up or underline in verse 39, that I've come for judgment. That was kind of confusing to me because the Bible, Jesus himself said, I wasn't sent now to judge. All judgment is going to be given to me. But remember, he said, I don't judge anything except as I hear from my Father. And now he seems to be saying that judgment is the whole reason why I came. And really, it all is cleared up if you just look up the Greek words that are translated judgment. This word is the word for, in its root, means to separate. And he's not speaking of the final act of judgment, but he's speaking of the result that comes from the separation that occurs because of his presence. Say it this way. You cannot honestly see who Jesus is and remain neutral about him. It's impossible. If you consider everything that he says, and he said some outlandish things to these people, and it divided them. We saw that last week, that some of the religious leaders were divided. Some thought he was from God, and some thought he wasn't. Some were convinced he was a sinner. And so this passage is addressed to religious leaders. It talks about what a true shepherd is. And it talks about spiritual blindness. And it's just interesting to me how much time Jesus spent with these guys who were trying to kill him and who would kill him later. How concerned he seemed to be that they were able to see clearly. Jesus shows up on the scene, and two things happen. People who were spiritually blind, if they respond correctly, all of a sudden can see clearly. People who think they already see clearly, whose hearts are not right for God, are exposed for being really spiritually blind. Separation and exposure, the result of Jesus showing up, that's what he means by it's for judgment that I came. It's interesting because I have lots of non-Christian friends who love a lot of things that Jesus said. I had one guy who I know he's not a believer, but he doesn't make fun of me for being a believer, which is interesting. He does think I'm weird, but I am, so that doesn't really bother me. But somebody used Jesus' name the other day in a negative way, and you know, it shocked me, but he said, because you saw me sitting across the room drinking my coffee, and he said, oh, we don't want to talk about him that way because he was a holy man. I thought, well, that's a good thing. But see, he doesn't believe Jesus was everything that he said he was. Maybe he's getting closer, but, you know, just saying Jesus was a good man isn't going to cut it. Saying he was a holy man isn't going to cut it because he said outlandish things. Some of them are in this passage today. They force you to choose, especially these people. Now remember, these religious leaders, the Pharisees, the professionals, the green berets, if you will, of Jewish religious life, the special forces, cutting-edge leaders in Judaism. These are the guys who not only thought they could see clearly, they thought they could see clearly enough to tell everybody else the direction to go. We saw back in chapter 8, Jesus looked at these guys and said, you know, if you knew my Father, you'd know who I was. But you don't know me, and you never have known my Father. And they're religious leaders. They're religious leaders who think they're going to show other people how to find the way to God. So their blindness is exposed simply by Jesus' presence. Some of them were honest enough to say, are we blind too? Verse 40, it could mean, do you think we're blind as well? It could have been in your face kind of a statement, as it often was. It could have been an honest question. Could have been both. It could have been the people whose hearts were being softened could have asked the honest question. The people who were refused to see were just being confrontive. Verse 41 is a little bit, it bothered me at first till I pondered it and looked up the words and then I understood it better. He said, well, if you really were blind, if you were unable to see, you would not be guilty of sin. Well, the Bible says, in fact, in the passage that Sierra read this morning and other places, that everybody's guilty of sin. In Greek, it says you would have no sin. And the word for sin in this case speaks of a specific sin. And if you take everything that he said, if you really weren't able to see, you would not be guilty of the sin you're guilty of. But because you claim to see, you are guilty of that sin, the sin of seeing the truth and yet rejecting it. That's why I love that little saying, proverb that we have, fits right here, that there are none so blind as those who will not see. It's interesting that he's even talking to them, but he's saying the real issue is not that you don't have enough information for spiritual perception. If you were unable to really see things spiritually, you wouldn't be guilty of the sin of rejecting the truth. But because you claim that you can see, remember all the stuff that they knew? They knew where Messiah was going to be born. They saw miracles that Jesus did. We're going to see in a couple of weeks, Jesus raises a dead guy, and they plotted to kill Jesus and the dead guy to cover their tracks. That's how hard some of their hearts were. You claim you can see. Jesus at one other place called them blind leaders of the blind. You don't know where you're going, and you're trying to tell other people to follow you, and they're not going to find out where they're going either. So those seem like harsh terms. I find it interesting. These are the only guys Jesus ever spoke harshly to. But you know what? He's talking to them. He's telling them the truth. He is giving them the opportunity of facing the truth, and I just love that about him. Some of the guys he's saying these things to are going to kill him in a few months. So verses 1 through 6 are the parable that he tells, the figure of speech, the illustration. We'll spend a couple of weeks on this whole discussion of what the good shepherd is, the ideal shepherd. And today I just want to spend most of our time talking about why his sheep recognize his voice. And like I said, I hope that it clears some things up. There are some things that are really important to understand, or this doesn't make sense to our American brains. Like a lot of things, those of you that went to Israel in one of our two trips, don't you understand the Bible better? There are just certain pictures that Jesus uses that they're really clear to you because you were there. You were there in the 21st century, which is a little bit different than it would have been back in Jesus' day, but there are still things that you can see. I had an experience on my second trip to Israel about 25 years ago that cemented this in my mind. I'll try to relate it to you. But let's just talk about the figures of speech that he's using. They were familiar to these people. He talks about the sheep pen or the sheep fold. It was a temporary place where you put the sheep before you let them out to pasture. It was a place of safety. Until I came to New England and saw a cattle pound, I didn't fully understand what this was because I grew up in ranch land country. Barbed wire fences or barbar, as they say in Texas. But have you ever seen a cattle pound? There's a bunch of them around. Just a pile of rocks in a circle with a high enough wall that a predator can't get over it. And then a narrow entrance. And in Israel, where there was more stones than wood, when they made one of these sheep pens, the shepherd would sleep in the opening. So if a thief or a predator wanted to get to the sheep, they would have to try to climb over those high walls or they'd have to go directly past the shepherd. So that's one picture. In verse 3, he talks about the watchman. I looked this word up. This was a guy who was hired to watch over in a large pen of sheep, several flocks at once. And he was hired to watch over all of the flocks in the sheep pen, the communal sheep pen, if you will, while the shepherds, you know, took off, went home, sat around the campfire, told jokes or whatever, something to give them a break, a hired person. And in the morning, when the shepherds came back, all they had to do was stand in the gateway and call out to their sheep, and all of the sheep milling around in there, and all the ones that were there would follow them out. So that's sort of the story behind some of these illustrations. 25 years ago, riding up from Caesarea Philippi, those of you that went to Israel can picture the windy, windy, windy road straight up the slopes of Mount Hermon. Snow on the top of the mountain and rough terrain. And our tour bus is in first gear, creeping its way up switchbacks. And we got just up in this middle sort of high mountain meadow, lush green grass, and our driver stopped. And I looked out the left side, and there was a huge flock of sheep with a little kid walking in front of them, and he was singing. And then coming down the opposite side, downhill, was a smaller flock of sheep with another kid, and he was talking to himself. And those two flocks of sheep took about 15 minutes. We're sitting there, and everybody's taking pictures and taking recordings. These two flocks of sheep hit the road right in the middle, and it's just sheep mayhem as they're working their way through. And then in about 15 minutes, the huge flock of sheep followed the guy who was singing on the way up the hill, and the smaller flock followed the guy who was talking to himself down the opposite side of the hill. It was a pretty cool thing to see. No herding, no rolling, you know, none of that. Just the little boy singing and the little boy talking, and the sheep just found their shepherd. Our tour guide, with in her perfect Oxford accent, said, I said, well, what is up with that? How in the world did they get all of those sheep sorted out? And she turned around. This lady was not a believer. She said, that's what Jesus was talking about in John chapter 10. She said, most of these sheep have never heard any other human voice except their shepherd. So another human voice sounds strange to them. And so I said, well, what's with the singing, what with the talking? And she said, that was just the shepherd's way of letting the sheep hear their voice. And as long as he kept singing, as long as he kept talking, the sheep were only going to follow the voice that they recognized. Isn't that brilliant? It was such a perfect illustration. She said, until they go to market, if they're being butchered, they never hear another human voice except their shepherd. And he's with them their whole lives, so he's the voice they know. I remember listening to that and thinking, that explains a lot, but here's the dilemma. The sheep had only one human voice speaking to them their whole lives. We have thousands of them on a daily basis. In the midst of, how do I learn to recognize God's voice? The one word, input. It is reducing the input from other places and increasing the input from him. It is a process. The more I am with him, the more I hear from him. I panic almost when I see people making choices, life-changing choices in their life, and they're getting all their advice from their friends who are not believers, getting their advice from their families who are not believers, taking the collective vote of all of their friends. And the one who gets the least amount of input is Jesus himself. And of course it's going to be confusing. You're going to get mixed messages. The thing that Jesus said here about they're not going to follow, I am ahead of myself. That's okay. I'll back up. They're not going to follow another voice because they don't recognize it. My friend John, when I got back from that trip to Israel years later, he and I were talking about this because he was just getting ready to go to Israel. And I said, well, keep your eyes peeled because this is pretty cool. This whole, you know, sheep following the voice of the shepherd thing. Well, when he got back from his pastor's trip to Israel, he told me a similar thing happened in the south of Israel, down in Judea. He said, our bus was stopped by a whole herd of agitated sheep. They were bleating. They were very agitated, and there was a guy behind them who kept hitting them with a stick and yelling at them. And my friend John rolled the bus window down and said, hey, I thought Israeli shepherds were supposed to lead the sheep, not drive the sheep. And the guy looked at him and laughed, and he said, I'm not the shepherd, I'm the butcher. And that picture was clear in my mind as well. When you see people being driven, it's not Jesus leading them. I see a lot of driven Christians. Man, they're making choices based on fear. They're making choices based on bad advice from unbelievers. You want to hear Jesus' voice? Be a sheep. If you have important decisions to make, you need to spend more time with him, not less time with him. I go nuts when I see people who are struggling who stay away from church. It drives me crazy. If they're staying away from church because they can hear Jesus better, that's one thing. I'm all for it. But often what happens is they stay away from any place where they can actually hear clearly, and the reverse should be true. We should be cutting out every other source of input that we possibly can, hearing from him as much as we can, and we'll learn to recognize his voice. Okay, now can I back up and do the thing I skipped in verses 1 and 2? I tell you the truth, a man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a robber. Remember, he's talking to religious leaders. He knew they would understand this. The one who comes through the gate, he said, is a shepherd, not a thief. Somebody who really cares for the sheep, who has a right to be a leader. And remember, he's talking to people who are refusing to come through him. Many of them are religious leaders, not because God made them a religious leader, because they were self-constituted religious leaders. Still a lot of people like that. I've met a number of them over the years. People who were pastors because their wife always wanted to be married to a pastor. A surprising number of pastors I've met like that way. If you could say, did God call you? Many of them don't know what you're talking about. I went to school. I took certain classes. I have a piece of paper. But to say that, you know, you came to your position of in God's fold through Jesus, they couldn't tell you that. He wasn't the reason they came in. Jesus said, I'm the gate. He says it a couple of times. It's one of the things that my New Age friends hate. That Jesus said. They like a lot of stuff he said, but they hate this. Anytime he says, I am the way, the truth, the life, nobody comes to God except through me, they hate that. And I always tell them, well, he's nuts or he's arrogant or it's the truth. Those are your three choices. He's deceiving or he's arrogantly deceiving or he's crazy and thinks he's the only way or he is. The only way. I've heard ministers in our county who have actually quite successful churches. If numbers say anything, they have more successful church than this one, who have taught from their pulpit. It's recorded on the radio and the newspapers that Jesus isn't the only way to get to God. And I think, well, what do you have to say about what he said? Because he said in several places, I'm it. You're not in the fold unless you come through me. I'm the gate. There's no way to get to God but through me. It's a very unpopular position. But that's one of those things that Jesus forces you to make a choice. Is he telling the truth or isn't he telling the truth? You can't ignore it. I would love to have seen their faces when he says, you know, if you are refusing to come through me, then your position in the fold with God's sheep that belong to him is the same as a thief or robber. You are ripping off God's people if you haven't come through me to take care of his sheep. And I think that's pretty easy to understand. I like the whole imagery in verse 3 about the watchman. because here you got the pandemonium, a bunch of different flocks all in one place, and one guy that doesn't know these sheep, he's just set there to watch the gate. And then each of the shepherds come back, and all they do is call out to their sheep, and in the midst of that confusion, all the sheep come out and follow the appropriate shepherd. God gave me a great deal of peace as I thought about this when I look at the myriad opinions in our world that people call spiritual truth. And all the people that have so much input from everywhere except for God. Man, this is where you can really preach against the internet, and you can preach against television and do all of those things that I would be ranting, so I'm not going to do that. But the plain point of fact is, you know, we aren't going to ever come to recognize his voice in this way without spending time with him, without having more input from him than from other sources. And that seems to be the thing that a lot of church people are unwilling to do. I don't know why. I find it a matter of survival. When I'm destitute, like I was this last week in many ways, I always have several different choices of what I can do. I can fill up my mind with Netflix, you know? I mean, I can just try to occupy my time because I'm forced to be at home because I didn't have gas to drive anywhere. I can feel sorry for myself. I can do all kinds of things. I can take advantage of that time to listen to what God has to say to me. And the effects of that are radically different. When I'm listening to him, instead of being more and more hopeless, I have more and more hope. You know what I mean? I hope you do. So this whole intercourse that he has with these guys on this subject, religious leaders should have understood when he talks about the knowing the voice and not following another voice and being a sneaker, sneaking into the sheep pen because you refuse to go through Jesus the door. Verse 6, John says, Jesus used these figures of speech, but they didn't understand what he was saying. This is the thing I saw this morning that I'd never seen before. I looked up the word understand. I don't know why it took me 25 years to look the word up. I just assumed it was the word that I always knew for understand. If you're interested in writing these things down, most of my word writers aren't here today. The word that's translated understand is the Greek word gnosko, which means to know by experience. And that all of a sudden gave a completely different light to why they didn't understand this figure of speech. Why they didn't understand the thing about recognizing his voice more than they would recognize the voice of a stranger. And the reason was because they had never personally experienced that sort of a relationship to Jesus, who said he was the good shepherd. And that's why they didn't understand it. Interestingly, he went on to explain and what that figure of speech meant because he wanted them to understand. Isn't that interesting? Over in verse 14, I had to circle the word know. My sheep know me, and I know my sheep the way that I know my Father, and my Father knows me. Four times, it's also the word gnosko, meaning I know experientially my sheep, and my sheep experientially know me in the same way that I know my Father experientially, and he knows me. There's a relationship involved. Wouldn't you think that in church, especially amongst church leaders, everybody would know God experientially? Wouldn't you think? It's not true. You don't have to talk to very many people before you realize some of these people don't have a clue what you're talking about when you're talking about knowing God in this way. I talk with some people who don't know God's voice simply because they don't understand the mechanics of it, or because I got so much input from every place else that that whisper that we sang about today is totally drowned out. There's no point within their daily lives where everything is shut out and they say, please speak to my heart, God. There's no point at which they even read his word so that he'll speak to their hearts. And so because of that, all they got is all the other input. Well, God never speaks to me. Not necessarily. What if I told you that in this room right now, there were pictures and music and voices and stories, full color, in this room right now? Would you think I was Looney Tunes? Well, you'd know that if I brought a TV up here and plugged it in and tuned it into certain frequencies, you would see those pictures and hear that music and hear those voices, right? But they don't start the minute I turn the TV on. They're here. Turning on the TV allows me to access those frequencies that are all around me. I don't buy the TV and turn the TV on to impress the television station to speak to me and send me the signals. It's sending the signals. I buy the TV and turn it on and tune it in to receive the signals that are already been sent. God doesn't have to be impressed to speak to his own children. He wants to. The failure is not in getting God to speak to me. The failure is in me being tuned in. And what automatically happens, you all know this, but it is a great illustration, isn't it? When you tune in one channel, you are automatically tuning out all the other channels. It wouldn't work if you just turned the TV on and you got all the signals coming from everywhere at the same time. It wouldn't work. So they invented a tuner so you could tune into that one frequency and see those pictures and hear those sounds. That's the way it is with God's voice. It's a very personal thing. And I have found in my life, I didn't understand it for the longest time. I'm grateful that I had the Bible because I know God speaks through the Bible. I know it's not the only way he speaks because you can't have a relationship with a book, only with a person. But if you want a safe bet as to knowing what God has to say, the Bible is excellent, even if you can't hear that voice to God speaking to your spirit. But the longer I know him, the closer I draw to him, the more I tune out other things, the more I recognize his voice. Where is it in verse 4? Your sheep follow him because they recognize his voice. Jesus is going to say later, my sheep recognize my voice. Interestingly, and I don't want to belabor the grammar of it, but the verb that's used that's translated to know or to recognize or to know intuitively is itself the result of a process. It is a state that you come to as a result of certain action having taken place. Nobody, like I said, automatically flips the switch and recognizes God's voice. I would say most of us, it was very unfamiliar to us the longer we went without hearing anything from him. Just like some people pick up the Bible and go, what? And other people reading it, expecting God to speak to them, feel like the ink is still wet, like it had their name on it, written just for them. So it's a process that I go through of learning to recognize his voice. The longer I'm with him and the more I'm listening to him. You're smart people. I'm not going to do the math. But if God gets 1 hour of my week where he's allowed to speak to me and every other voice gets the rest of the week, how am I going to recognize his voice? How? How is that going to happen? You know what I mean? it's just a result of relationship. The people that God speaks to them have periods of time where it's hard to hear. But almost always that's boiled down to distraction. Pure and simple. What do you think the devil's number one deal is, especially in these days? It's distraction, pure and simple. It's the reason why some people aren't here today. Some people probably have good reasons and other people don't have good reasons. It's the reason why sometimes when things are really hard, I just sit there and self-destruct. And other times when things are really hard, I come out of that feeling so close to Jesus. It's all, am I listening for his voice? Am I tuning everything else out? He wants to speak. He does speak. It's not out loud very often, although God is certainly able to speak out loud. But he does speak to our hearts. Conversation I had this last week with this brother who talked with him for 2 hours. He came to, after this conversation, he said, you know, after you talk about it this way, he said, I think God spoke to me. It just wasn't as involved as maybe what he, didn't sound like Charlton Heston. It didn't have reverb on it. You know, there was no hoop-de-doo. It was just that word to his heart that calmed his fears. And he said, do you think that was the Lord? And I said, well, what do you think he said? And he said, well, to me, it sure sounds exactly like that kind of stuff he says to me. And then he realized, maybe I've been listening for the wrong thing. Maybe it's a lot simpler than I thought. I want to tell your feathers story. Right when Karen was a really new Christian, it had to only be a few days that she had known the Lord. Remember, you fell down the stairway. You started to fall down the stairway in your dad's shop. So as she's losing her balance, about to fall down a steep stairway backwards, when she told the story, if I'm getting the details right, she said, I just heard this voice in my head that said, relax, I'll catch you. Well, you don't have a choice when gravity is winning and you're falling. But she said, when I fell, it was like falling on feathers. There was no damage, and she got to the bottom. But the most exciting thing was, I think God spoke to me. Do you think that was God that said that to me? And I said, absolutely. I think sometimes little kids are better at this than adults. It just depends on how much other input they have. Sometimes we don't have any choice about how much input there is, do we? And sometimes if I could just be quiet and be still all the time, that would be fabulous. And sometimes I just can, and sometimes it's my choice, sometimes it's not. I do know that the fact is simple, and I love that illustration that I saw in Israel that all those years ago, that if I spent all my time just hearing that one voice, or just predominantly hearing what that voice had to say, I would know him so well that it would be much easier to recognize. Here's my challenge. I am not a scholar. I study harder now than I ever have. And consequently, I'm learning. But I have to be careful that I'm not listening to the voice of the guys that write the commentaries without listening to the voice of my master, because they are not necessarily the same thing. The guys I'm listening to, this goes for me and you. The guys that are telling us what God's saying may not know. So your safest place is spend time with them yourself. Oh, I'm just so stupid, God. Hey, he's not thinking that way. He's thinking, this is my precious child. They want to know what I have to say. They are taking time to listen. I promise you, it will get better and clearer the more you do it. Sure been true for me. I do think if you take this in its context, this probably infuriated some of these people, and it probably liberated some of them. The ones that were trying to find a way into the sheepfold without going through Jesus were infuriated by what he said. But the ones who were on the fence, who were saying, maybe he is from God, they were hearing the right thing to hear. If you, my friend, Mr. Rabbi, are a true shepherd of Israel, caring for God's people, you'll come through me, through the gate, and that'll prove that you are not a thief and not a robber. I take that to be real seriously. Sheep are led, they are not driven. They don't do well when they're being driven. And have you ever seen, any of you ever seen sheep dog trials? It's one of my favorite parts of the Highland Games. But have you ever looked at a sheep face during a sheep dog trial? They are panicked. They do not like being chased. And of course, the reason why a shepherd would have a sheep dog is to try to keep them under control, but it is frantic. I love that I got to see that picture of a little kid and 500 sheep, and the little kid's singing. And he's not even looking over his shoulder. He's just singing as he's walking up the hill, and all of the sheep are following him because that's the voice they know. Doesn't it make it simple? I think for me, it is the thing I have to work the hardest at in my life. I can tell you it's the thing I pray for Jen more than anything. I mean, I pray for her healing every day, but I'm praying that she'll be able to hear from the Lord because he can tell her stuff that's going to touch her heart in a way that no human can say. We all just give our opinions. I have to say, too, that's the thing I pray for you. Each one of you. Yet I know God isn't going to force himself on us, and I know that sometimes, like I said, we have so much distraction that we didn't choose. We've got input we didn't choose. But I have found that sometimes a very little effort at just being a sheep. Pastor Bob, how do I recognize God's voice? Well, number one, it is a process. So it'll get easier the more you do it, but it's going to have to involve being away from other sources of input for enough of a period of time to learn to recognize. I think the more I know his word, the more, especially the gospels that I study Jesus, the more I recognize who's trying to fake, what voices are giving me un-Jesus-like advice and which ones jive with him. I'm going to recognize that. Verse 8, all who came before me were thieves and robbers. He's not talking about the prophets that God sent. He's talking about the prophets that God didn't send. The people who were self-constituted prophets, who claimed they were showing the way. And he just said, you know, anybody that didn't come to their position of spiritual leadership through me is a ripoff. And everybody that came before me that claimed to be from God but wasn't, they were a ripoff. And he said, you know, the real sheep of God's people didn't follow them. I love what Elizabeth Elliot said about this in her book on guidance, God's guidance. She said, it is true, I'm just the dumb sheep. It's true, I could be confused, and maybe sometime I think it's God speaking to me, and it's not. And I get misled. She said, but the thing I hold on to is that even if that happens, he's still my shepherd. You know what I mean? Even if I'm not hearing right, he's still my shepherd. And he has a way, if I'm trying to hear from him, of correcting that. And I found great comfort in that. Yeah, I can be fooled, especially with an internal voice. No, 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 no. You know what I mean? The old Twilight Zone thing. But if in my heart I'm trying to hear from him, especially if I'm feeding myself with his word, I'll learn to recognize whether that was from him or not. And God is not real tense about this. He knows it's going to take time. But I think all this language about the fold, you know, in verse 9 where it talks about coming in and going out of the fold, Sheep are defenseless. They have to be protected. They have to be led to where the food is. They have to be led home. Sheep are one of the few animals that cannot retrace their steps. So somebody has to lead them. I wish that the Bible used the example of grizzly bears or lions or wolves or something when it talked about us rather than sheep, because they're about the stupidest animal that there is. But when he's calling himself a shepherd, and when he's calling us sheep, he's just saying, look, I know you need protection. I know you need to be led. I'll be that. So I don't feel like I'm explaining this very well today. I do get another shot at it next week. Let's spend the next the rest of our time, the next 12 minutes, just looking at what's next in our passage. I'm going to look at verse 10. We'll close with verse 10. It's a big verse. I could have preached a whole message just on this. If you take it out of its context, it's saying the same thing that it is in context. But I think it's an excellent verse for, in a nutshell, what Satan's agenda is versus what Jesus's agenda is. The thieves, the people who are deliberately trying to rip off God's people, or the people who don't know God well enough to know they are ripping off God's people, both are inspired by the enemy, who is a thief and a liar and a murderer from the beginning, Jesus said. So his purpose is to steal and to kill and to destroy. Here's the thing, though. He doesn't knock on our door and say, hi, I'm Satan, now your relentless enemy. I'm bent on destroying you, and I just wanted to let you know I'm going to be trying to deceive you today. No, I would be prepared if that was it. He's got so many insidious ways of getting into my brain. But he can't do it without my permission. That's why it's so important what I'm feeding myself, what I'm listening to. And his agenda is just to steal whatever he can steal. His ultimate goal is to destroy me. Steal, kill, and destroy. What is Jesus' agenda? He wants me to have life. Boy, that is so misunderstood and so misrepresented, isn't it? The Amplified Bible says in verse 10 about, I've come that they may have life. It said, I have come that they might have and enjoy life to the full until it overflows. It's like putting a glass under a faucet and turning the faucet on and then just not moving the glass. The fuller it gets, the more it overflows. And Jesus said, a man's life does not consist in the amount of stuff that he has. I found it this week. I mean, I've had times when I had a six-figure income and pretty much could buy anything I wanted, and my life was very different. I have still found that that real life, the kind of life Jesus talks about here in verse 10, only comes from him. And when you don't have the stuff that the world tells you will give you life, you still have him, and you still have that kind of life that overflows. To me, it's like a rogue wave that will just wash over me sometimes at the strangest moments. I will find myself rejoicing at the strangest moments. And there's no outward reason for it to be true. I've found this happening when I have a splitting headache and I can barely think. And that life washes over me. The Greek word zoe, Z-O-E, that's translated life, is the same one in John 3:16, where it talks about everlasting life, zoe. Life on every plane of existence, the kind of life that's going to outlast the biology of our bodies. Eternal life. Jesus said, that's what I want people to have, and I want them to enjoy it, and I want them to have it till it overflows, whether they have stuff or not. Whether they're sick or not, you can still have that life, but it comes from him. It comes from a person. I was thinking of all kinds of connections of this. I was thinking of when we studied on Wednesday night about the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, guarding our minds and our hearts, and Jesus saying, "My peace I give to you," and how out of whack I was with that, just like I've been out of whack in my life with what life was. Looking to Jesus to give me stuff so I could have life. Looking to Jesus to give me stuff so I could have peace. When what he's saying is, I have something so much better for you. Seek that. Then whether you have stuff or not, then when whether circumstances are what you want or not, you still have the peace that I give, the kind of peace I have. You still have the life that I give. But it comes from him. I'm the good shepherd, verse 11. It says it twice. Oh, I've got time. I've got at least 5 minutes. The Greek word, if you're writing it down, some of you are, is the word kalos, K-A-L-O-S. It's a fat word. Like I said, it took a whole page in one of my commentaries. Kalos. It means beautifully crafted, perfect in every aspect. It's a combination of efficient and beautiful. I always tell the story of my friend in Gold Beach, Oregon, that makes wood chisels, woodworking tools. And a six-piece set of his woodworking tools sells for $9,000. I saw a set of them when I visited him once. He's a Christian brother, and they were in a secure, like jewel, like diamonds, in a secure display case. And he punched in the code and took them out and brought over a red oak plank and pulled out one of the gouges. And he says, "Here, try this." And I thought, "I'm not touching this thing. This is a $9,000 set of chisels." He said, "Oh, but they're still chisels. They may be beautiful, but," he said, "they're not built to just sit there. And they're handcrafted to fit the hand of the person that buys them. You buy blanks, and then he carves it to fit your hand." And they're just amazing works of art. But I took that red oak plank and ran a few of those woodwork, and it cut through them like they were butter. That's what I think of when I think of this word kalos. It means whatever you think of as the most beautiful and the best working of whatever thing you're talking about, the most ideal chisel, the most ideal shepherd, that just to watch it in action is a thing of beauty. Jesus said, "That's me. That's the kind of shepherd I am." A shepherd protects, a shepherd guides, a shepherd feeds. A shepherd watches over the sheep, whether they're paying attention to him or not. Which in essence, he says, a good shepherd like me, kalos, the ideal shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. 1 John 3:16, if you can write it in your margins, not John 3:16 that you see at football games and basketball games, 1 John 3:16, which is in the epistles, not the gospels, says, "This is how we know what love is, that Jesus Christ laid down his life for us." Laid down his life is not speaking of his death. It's speaking of the whole way he lived his life up until his death. That's the same phrase he uses here 5 times. The whole way that he lives his life. I looked at this when God called me to be a pastor again. And I don't like this whole laying down your life thing. I don't. I like living for me. I'm good at it. And the whole thing of realizing that if God calls me to lay down my life for a bunch of people, I may not like them. I still have to do it because that's what the job means. If I'm going to be the kind of shepherd that he is, it means that I got to stop living my life for me. And I had to think long and hard about that because I wasn't sure I really wanted to do it. So I'm doing it as best I can. I'm asking him to show me how to do it. But here's the thing. Even if you have an earthly shepherd that's totally weenie on that subject, you have a heavenly shepherd that is absolutely the ideal example of what that means. And I find that thrilling. I'm the good shepherd. Good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand isn't the shepherd that owns the sheep. So when the threat comes, you know, he just runs away. And he runs away because he doesn't really care about the sheep. I've seen that happen. We've seen it happen here. To be fair, there was a time in my life when I did it. I just ran away out of fear. It seemed too costly to stay. Cramped my style too much, so I just ran away. I'm a different person than I was then. Jesus is such a wonderful example. You wonder how he cares about you. You wonder how he's going to care about you when times get hard. I'll tell you this piece of advice. Press in closer. Listen harder. Feed yourself with more input that comes from him. Don't fall into that trap of just withdrawing into yourself. Don't fall for it. It's a ripoff. Don't run to the advice of your friends unless you know they're going to turn you to Jesus, because that'll be a ripoff. So you probably can tell I'm struggling with this today. I do have next week to spend some more time on talking about what it means to be a good shepherd and all the things Jesus says about himself. Worth looking at. I wish I could have a question and answer thing, but that doesn't work well with the recording. Because I always like to know if I'm explaining it in a way that you can understand. It was great last week. I had so many people talk to out in the lobby that you could tell their brain was working and they're applying all of this stuff that we talked about in the last 2 weeks, and that was good. In context, he is talking to religious leaders, and man, I'm surprised how many of them don't know this stuff. And of course, then I didn't either. None of us know it till we look to Jesus and allow him to teach us. So I'm praying for you that you'll hear from him, that you'll listen not to impress him so he'll speak to you. Like buying the TVs to impress the TV station so they'll send out programs. No, they're already there. But your heart will be open to hear from him, because he has wonderful things to say to you. He has guidance. And I know about you, but I need it. I need it on a daily basis. All the sounds of Bible covers zipping means, I guess, you know that I'm done. Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for your word. Thank you for being a good shepherd, even when I have just been a stupid sheep and at least temporarily followed the wrong voices. But I am grateful that you didn't give up on me. You didn't stop being my shepherd. You were very faithful, capable to come and find me and get me following closer, hard after you. So I pray for each one, Lord, that hears these words, that you would do that for them. The days are evil. Times are hard. It's confusing. The ones that are trying to live for you are finding increased resistance to that. So, Lord, may we find refuge. May we find comfort in all that you want to be to us as our shepherd. And may we hear your voice, how we need it. Keep us safe, Lord. Thank you for giving us a little bit of a spell of warm weather to melt the ice. Thank you for being here with us today. You're so faithful. Amen. Thanks for coming.